The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate, 97.7 FM, Greenville, South Carolina, 97.1 FM in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and for free all around the world on the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Grab it, put it on your cell phone, your tablet, your laptop, your television, your whatever, and you can listen to the show all 4 hours. All 5 days of the week. You can listen to the fine programming here on the Infinity Sports Network and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show, 6 till 10 a.m. Ryder Than You with Bill Ryder from 10 to noon. The Rich Eisen Show from noon to 3. And then, of course, our other local show, Wire to Wire, with Cole Bryson and Diesel from 3 to 7 p.m. Make sure you grab that Audacy app. And do not forget, I was going to do it this week, but obviously with Media Days, it has been absolute chaos around here. Starting next week, I'm going to have a bumper, a sounder for it, and everything. Starting next week, we will have our Ray Memorial Hotline Take of the Week. And I think we're going to do it on Thursdays, but we are going to start next week the Ray Memorial Hotline Take of the Week. You are going to have the opportunity from Friday till the next Wednesday night to go on the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. To go on the Audacy app, to go to the Fan Upstate page, to click the Leave a Voice Message button, and record an up to 60-second voice message. It can be about anything. You can say anything that you want, whether it is noon o'clock in the daytime and you're on your lunch break and have a take, or whether it is 2:30 in the morning and you've been inspired by 7 too many Jack and Cokes and you got a sports breakdown or life breakdown. You can go to the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Go to the Fan Upstate page, click on the Leave a Voice Note button, leave up to a 60-second message, and starting a week from tomorrow, on Thursdays, we will have the Ray Memorial Hotline Take of the Week. I reserve the right to change the name, because I do like that it's got a little flow, but like I might come up with something that's a little more jingly.
I don't know. Your memory on Thursdays is not very good.
Listen, it's been wild. My man Hayton S. Mario left us. Lulu Kesson's on vacation. Rashad Beard left the Fridays. It threw my whole Thursday world into flux. And now we have to kind of figure it out. So I'm going to fill the space because we know and have never once forgotten that at 9:20 on Thursdays, we have Fight Club with Great Win Lonzo.
Not today, though. I mean, not tomorrow.
Well, certainly not today because today is Wednesday.
Yeah, not tomorrow, though.
We will push Fight Club.
Not next week either. So, I mean,
Why not next week? Oh, because we're at ACC Media Days.
Yeah.
Fight Club will be on Fridays this week and next week. All right, just go ahead and put that out there.
Because apparently wrestling doesn't exist during football season.
I mean, it is.
I mean, there's that. Yeah.
I get it.
We can talk about baseball. We can talk about, you know, WNBA.
Even though, by the way, I don't know if you caught this because it was very late at night, so I didn't send you the text, but when Cal, the big dumper, Raleigh, won the home run derby on Monday, and by the way, we're going to talk about the All-Star game here in a minute because the last two nights have had so much fun. All right, so we're going to get to that in a minute. But after Cal the Big Raleigh Dumper won the home run derby, which was already a very cool story, his dad was throwing in pitches, his little brother was the catcher hyping him up behind the plate. It was an absolute slugfest. After it was over, the Big Dumper is standing on the field. And he's talking to Jeff Passan from ESPN. Yeah, Passan's like, he's been working this All-Star game. And Passan's kind of like developing a little personality, which I absolutely love out of the kid. So Jeff Passan's out there, and he's asking Cal Raleigh questions, and he's asking his dad questions, asking little brother questions. And he goes back to Cal for what is very clearly like the last one or two questions before they end the interview. And he asks Cal Raleigh a question. And I will say, lovingly, as somebody who watched Cal Raleigh play his college ball, he played at Florida State. And when I was broadcasting down in Florida, I saw Cal Raleigh play at Florida State and in Jacksonville a couple of times when they got together with the Mighty Gators of Florida in the three-game set that they play. Not a super media savvy. He's just kind of a dude, right? Like, he's not, you know, I was really, really honored to win the derby. Like, he's not that guy. He's just kind of a low-key young guy that is like, yeah, no, it felt real cool, man. Like, what a cool thing to do. So Passan asks him the last question, Lonzo, and he puts the mic in his face. And Cal, you've been here. You've done this a long time. You know how somebody, you'll ask them a question, and you set them up to give you a great answer, and they give you back like three or four words, and then they just kind of look at you, and you're like, was that the end of it? Like, are you done with your answer? Should I start the next question? And you kind of have that minute of like, that was a real short answer. I kind of expected more, and I don't really know what to do now. They had that moment, and as Jeff Passan's holding a mic to Cal Raleigh, who's not talking anymore. From the left side of the screen, in walks Cody Rhodes, for no reason, just walks in side of the, like, profile, not like facing the camera, side profile, is standing there. Well, as Cody Rhodes walks in, thinking the interview's over, Passon asks Cal Raleigh another question and gives him the mic to answer it. Raleigh does give an answer. And so for, like, legitimately 35, 40 seconds, there's Jeff Passon, there's Cal Raleigh, and then there's the side profile of Cody Rhodes holding a Home Run Derby championship belt that he's presented to Cal. And he just like, stands there. And I'm like, Cody, you're supposed to know your timing, buddy. That's like your one job, is to know your timing cue here. And Cody just stands there until Passon's done. But my favorite part is he hands Cal Raleigh the championship belt for winning the Derby. And I'm expecting Passon's going to be like, and here's WWE superstar and former world champion Cody Rhodes presenting a championship. Passon doesn't even acknowledge it. He just backs out of the screen. Cody hands him the belt. Cal shakes his hand, turns around. Now it's just Cody Rhodes standing there, and he just slides backwards out of the screen. And that's it. That was the whole appearance. It was freaking
hilarious.
All right,
if I recall, I believe Passon actually is a wrestling fan.
I believe Jeff Passon is.
Yeah, so.
Which makes it all the funnier that Cody Rhodes walks in, sub profile, stands there 35 seconds. No one speaks to him. He hands the belt. Passon leaves, and Cody just slides back out of frame. I was like, buddy, that's the worst jobber performance I've seen out of a wrestler. Incredible. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is 7:06 in the morning, which means it is time for us to tell you at least what we think are the top three sports stories in the world of sports. It's time for us to tell you what you're going to be talking about when you get to the office this morning. Settle down, respond to those passive-aggressive emails from the boss that you don't want to respond to, but it's the middle of the week. You have to. When you're done with that, though, you're going to walk down the hallway. You're going to go find Jeff from shipping. You're going to meet in the break room. You're going to stand around that water cooler just over in the dark corner of the break room where the boss can't see if he's making the rounds, and you're going to talk sports. And if you're going to talk sports with Jeff from shipping, you got to know what's going on. And if you got to know what's going on, you've come to the right place because we do this. It is indeed the water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office this morning and start talking sports with your coworkers. When you do, this is what you're going to be talking about, people. Let us dive right in with item number one. There are going to be people in Seattle, Washington today that are going to be very happy with what I am about to say. I assume there are also going to be people in Las Vegas, Nevada, who are going to be very happy with what I am about to say. And the reason for that is because those two spots are, I believe, the two most likely landing spots for expansion teams in the NBA. Now, that's been kicked around for a few years now. It is something that has been discussed and debated. Do we bring back the Seattle Supersonics? Does Las Vegas, who now have the Aces, they are now getting the A's in a couple of years. They've got the Raiders out of Oakland. Las Vegas is becoming a mecca for American professional sports. Now, I think it sucks for the players who go to Las Vegas because on one hand, you get to live in Las Vegas, which if you're young, dumb, impressionable, and have money, Las Vegas is an incredible city. If you're not into the nightlife, the glitz, the glamour, Las Vegas maybe not the best place in the world. More importantly, not a lot of homegrown fans in Las Vegas, but it is a traveling destination, one of the most traveled to professional sports outlets. However, they're not getting a team because they have a great stadium or a great fan base or any of that. They're getting a stadium and teams in Las Vegas because away teams want to go there. And because people go there and they spend a buttload of money, teams in Las Vegas, though I don't have the financials in front of me, are probably going to make as much money from people coming to see them as they are from people that are in Las Vegas who go to games. Adam Silver, the commissioner of the National Basketball Association, is currently attending the Board of Governors meetings in Las Vegas, Nevada this week. And Adam Silver yesterday, though he was hesitant to provide details, did acknowledge that the NBA is looking into expansion and the debates behind the scenes are going on. Now, Silver did say, quote, a lot of analysis needs to be done and nothing has been predetermined one way or another. And without any specific timeline, we're going to be as thorough as possible and look at all potential issues. Silver went on to add that a, quote, consensus quickly formed that the league office should do the work and work with these particular committees in the board and present that analysis. We are now engaged in this in-depth analysis, something we were not prepared to do before. But beyond that, as I said, it's really day one of that analysis in terms of price, potential timeline. It's too early to say. And again, I think that also assumes the outcome of this analysis. It is a truly complicated issue. End quote. Silver said that the next step in the analysis, after finding out is it profitable in general, is to begin to look at specific markets and investigating the facilities in those markets and the, quote, appetite, end quote, of sports fans in those markets. That's one reason I think Seattle will be a front runner. Folks in Seattle have wanted their beloved Supersonics back ever since they moved to OKC and became the Thunder. As a matter of fact, I was watching a really funny discussion the other day from on one of my social media feeds from a sports talk radio show in Seattle, and a caller called in and was like, hey, do we as Seattle fans, do we get to claim the Thunder championship as a Supersonics championship? And the host was like, I'd like to, because I'd like to say Seattle has a proxy title here, but absolutely not. They've been gone so long, and we can't sit here and cuss out the Thunder for leaving us and then try to take credit for the title. I respected that take. Anyway, I think Seattle is on that list. I also think Las Vegas is on that list as well. The last time the league expanded, 21 years ago, when the Charlotte Hornets were added after that franchise moved to New Orleans. Before that, the NBA added six teams in a seven-year span from 88 through 95, bringing a franchise back to Seattle to replace the Supersonics. Silver called Seattle a, quote, incredible market, end quote. So I do think that they are in the mix. One more quick basketball story as an addendum here. Caitlin Clark left last night's 85-77 win over the Connecticut Sun at TD Garden because of an apparent groin injury that occurred in the final minute of the game. Indiana coach Stephanie White confirmed Clark, quote, felt a little something in her groin, end quote, and that she would be evaluated to, quote, see what happens from there, end quote. In the last minute of the game, Caitlin Clark completed a bounce pass to teammate Kelsey Mitchell for a layup with about 40 seconds left to go, and then immediately began to hold the inside of her right thigh. She walked over, banging her head against the stanchion next to the bench in apparent frustration. It was visibly emotional as she went to the fever bench, placing a towel over her head. Before this season, Clark had never sat out a game in her college or pro career due to injury, but WNBA season number two has been riddled by injuries. She has sat out so far 9 regular season games, 10 including the Commissioner's Cup final when the Fever knocked off the Lynx a couple of weeks ago. This is the most recent injury since her return from injury less than a week ago in a loss to the visiting Golden State Valkyries. So this is a tough spot for Caitlin Clark. Now the All-Star game is in jeopardy. The next half of the season is in jeopardy. And honestly, the Fever, who very much had title hopes, and Caitlin Clark, who had MVP hopes, all of those are in jeopardy now as well. We'll check in on this story later on in the week, but let's get to item number two. I don't necessarily know that this is one that is going to impact the conference we are currently covering here in Atlanta, Georgia, the Southeastern Conference, but down the road, it might. The Pac-12 and Mountain West conferences are headed back to court after failing to reach a settlement in mediation over $55 million in poaching fees. The conferences failed to reach an agreement by yesterday's deadline in mediation that began back in May. The Pac-12 requested a hearing on the pending motion to dismiss on September 9th. The Pac-12, according to a statement released yesterday by the conference, said they remain committed to moving forward with legal action in response to the Mountain West attempt to impose so-called poaching penalties provisions we believe are unlawful and intend to obstruct our ability to act in the best interest of our student athletes. Now, this all comes from the fact that Colorado State, Utah State, San Diego State, Fresno State, and Boise State have all left the Mountain West to move over to the Pac-12. Well, there was a contract in place that said if a school leaves early and the Pac-12 absorbs those schools, they would owe $50 million for the first school, excuse me, $10 million for the first team that left, and then $500,000 $100,000 for every additional team that left, on top of $17 million plus exit fees that each individual school was responsible for as a part of a different agreement. So the exit fees are still in play, but the poaching fee, which is that $10 million plus half a mil for every other team, is still there. They say that adds up with the attorney's fees, etc., to around $55 million. The Pac-12 is arguing in front, or went to the mediator to say, look, that's too high, and those were unenforceable contracts. The Mountain West is going, no, they're not. Signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours, baby. You owe us the cash. They went to mediation. They could not reach a settlement, and I'm not shocked by that, because while they had to go to the settlement hearing, the Mountain West is not going to say, we'll just give us 20 and call it even. $55 million would be windfall for the Mountain West. For the Pac-12, it would be devastating. That is a huge chunk of money that would go away from a conference that went from maybe the most historic conference in college football to a conference that is now fighting for its existence as, forget a power conference, just a conference in general. And finally, let's get to item number three. Last night, the 2025 Major League Baseball All-Star Game took place right here in Atlanta, Georgia. Featured the best two pitchers in the world on the mound as Tarek Skubal and Paul Skeens took to the bump. It included the first automatic ball strike system challenges in All-Star Game history. It included a 6-run comeback for the American League. And, as I heard Lonzo talk about in the Sports Flash, here's your answer, great one. It was the first time ever that we did not play extra innings. Instead, we went to a mini home run derby to determine the winner. Both the American League and National League sent batters to the plate. Each got three swings to hit as many dongs as they could. Whoever ended up with the most dongs collected would win the tiebreaker and the MLB All-Star Game. Well, it turned out that, and as a Braves fan, this destroys me as a person. Philadelphia Phillies slugger Kyle Schwarber became the hero. Three swings, three big old dongs out of Truist Park yesterday. A 4-3 home run edge for the National League. They get the win. They get the victory over the American League last night. Schwarber was 0-for-2 with a walk during the nine innings, becoming the first player to win the All-Star Game MVP without recording a hit in the game, as the home run derby is considered part of the contest. So Schwarber had a couple of good defensive plays, but also went yad multiple times in a mini derby. The tiebreaker used last night, it was established in 2022, but last night was the first time that it was utilized. Boone and Dave Roberts had to submit their list of participants and alternates to MLB before the game in case they needed to get there, which is why you did not see names like Aaron Judge batting for the American League. How in the world do you have Aaron Judge on this team and you don't put him on a home run derby team? I've seen a lot of dumb decisions in baseball this year. I'm a Braves fan. I have seen oodles of them not sending Aaron Judge to the dish for the American League. Listen, as a National League guy, cool, great. I don't really get into the AL, NL stuff. I don't really care with interleague play. Like, it's not the same as it used to be. But not sending Aaron Judge to the dish in a home run derby has got to be the most questionable decision I've seen in Major League Baseball this year. I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about it here in the next segment, because A, it's a little bit of a shorter segment. B, between the Derby on Monday and the All-Star Game last night, I mean it when I tell you, Major League Baseball has the best All-Star break in sports. It has the best, with the exception of NHL's Four Nations Faceoff that happened this year, which was beyond electric, but that is not every year, at least not yet. I hope it is one day. Beyond the Four Nations Faceoff, the regular NHL Star Game, it's fine. Skills competition, it's fine. The boys want to win, but they do the weird, like, divisional mini-team. I'm not down with that. NFL All-Star Game, Pro Bowl, it's fun for me. I like seeing freaks of nature do superhuman things on a flag football field, but, like, it ain't football, so it's fine. The NBA All-Star Game, they're scoring 190,000 points. It's fun to watch athletes, basketball players, do basketball stuff that I couldn't do on a video game, but it's fine. The MLB All-Star Game the last 2 days has been the most fun I have had watching, again, because I'm a Braves fan, The MLB All-Star Game is the most fun, and Home Run Derby, most fun I've had watching baseball so far this year, and I want to talk a little bit about why it was successful and what we took away from it next. After that, David Nuno of TexAgsLive.com joined us on the show yesterday. We talked a little Aggies. We talked a little South Carolina Gamecocks. We'll go behind enemy lines with David Nuno to wrap up this hour, Mark Henry in the next hour, and more as the Rob Brown Show rolls on. It's a special edition live from the College Football Hall of Fame, presented by Ingles. It's the Fan Upstate. It is the Rob Brown Show, live from the College Football Hall of Fame here in Atlanta, Georgia, for day number 3 of 4 of SEC Media Days, sponsored by our friends at Ingles Supermarket. Low prices, love the savings. We appreciate Ingles for being a phenomenal sponsor and helping us get here and pull off this event. Now, I have two things that I want to get here to, mainly because I have teased both of them, and as Lonzo will attest, we never tease anything on the show and then don't pay it off.
No, I mean, who would do that sort of thing?
Yeah, that would be, I mean, unprofessional would be the kindest thing I could say about that.
Un-American.
Absolutely. So here's the two things I'd like to pay off. I would like to start with this. 5 years ago, we had the COVID lockdowns. 5 years ago, the NBA placed its entire league inside of a bubble down in Orlando, Florida. 5 years ago, you will remember, a story that we talked about extensively on air. When NBA player Lou Williams left the bubble and got caught. And when he left the bubble and got caught, he had to sit out for a couple of weeks. He had to go through COVID testing in order to be allowed back into the NBA bubble. Lou Williams, who was at that point a member of the Clippers, got into a little bit of heat for that as he, again, stepped out of the bubble, got in trouble, ended up having to sit out the first two seeding games of the 2019-20 season to meet his quarantine requirements. And a few weeks later, Lou Williams was asked, why'd you pop the bubble? Why did you leave? Why did you risk an NBA paycheck to do that? And Lou Williams gave what? To this day, and this is, I say it as if it is a joke, I mean it when I say I am not joking. I think Lou Williams may have pulled off the greatest advertisement for anything in the history of advertisements for anything. Lou Williams says, I left the bubble to go to the Magic City Gentlemen's Club in Atlanta, Georgia. And they said, oh, Lou, you do know that pictures of pretty ladies with minimal clothing on are available for free on the internet, correct? And Lou Williams said, oh, no. I didn't go for the gals. I didn't go for the ladies. I went because Magic City Gentlemen's Club in Atlanta, Georgia has the best wings on the planet. And then he went on to explain that the lemon pepper wings at Magic City Gentlemen's Club in Atlanta, Georgia are his go-to jam. And so for 5 years, Rob Brown has been talking about, I want to try the lemon pepper wings at Magic City Gentlemen's Club in Atlanta, Georgia. And I just haven't gotten yet the opportunity. I've been to Atlanta a number of times. Most times it was either like for a day, popping in, going to a Braves game, popping back over, or for some event. The Rob Brown Show back on your radio live at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia. Some technical difficulties there. I apologize for that. We got caught off, but I believe we are back up and running. So I was telling the story. And Lonzo, I don't know where I got cut off there because I just kind of kept going with my story until you called me.
Well, the thing is, you got cut off. You were still talking about Lou.
Okay.
You hadn't gotten to the part where you actually went to go get the wings.
Beautiful. All right. So yesterday after we got off the air at 6 o'clock, went back to the hotel, dropped off the gear, and a buddy of the show who I shan't name because I'm pretty sure he's good, but just in case, I shan't name, but a buddy of the show who is in town, a friend of mine on and off the air, obviously, was like, dude, you've been talking about these wings. Like, shut up. Let's go get the wings. So we met up, and we went to Magic City, the Gentlemen's Club. Now, you can order on their website, and they, as we pointed out, do have takeout. But I learned you do have to go in to get the takeout. So I did go into Magic City for just a brief minute, and it's everything I thought it was going to be. It's incredible. So we got the wings and we left, and we were going to another bar.
Wait. What's incredible?
It's the inside
of the place, or
it is. I don't know how to describe it, other than to say, it is both everything I thought it would be and nothing like what I thought it would be. I had in my head that it was going to be this like massive facility with like 10 different stages and, you know, lounges and VIP and all. And it wasn't. Like, it wasn't a very big place. It was great when I would say it was, for your sake, I would say it was like the size of maybe two or three average corporate buildings, conference rooms. All right. And there was one big stage, one small stage off to the side, and that was pretty much it. Like chairs around it, bars, but they were like regular bar four tops. It was the perfect mix of like a gentleman's club that has NBA and NFL players as a clientele, but also a dive bar. It was perfect, right? Like, if it was just a bar and not a gentleman's club, it's absolutely a bar I would go to on the regular to hang out and watch football, all right? So, we went in, we got our wings, we left, and we took them. We were going to another bar. We were going to a dive bar that I was informed yesterday by a resident of Atlanta, Georgia, that is that Charles Barkley is a regular of this dive bar. It is a little bitty, hole-in-the-wall dive bar that, like, the TVs are from the late 90s. Didn't care. I got told it's an incredible dive bar that is very generous with the beverages and very cheap compared to the other bars in Atlanta. So that's where we went. Well, we had the wings, so we literally, in what has been a fantastic evening, we sat in the back of a pickup truck on a tailgate eating lemon pepper wings from Magic City as advertised by the great lemon pepper Lou Williams. Here's the review, though. We've been waiting 5 years for this, and I have it. I want to start with the most important thing. They're not big meaty wings. I think I was kind of expecting big meaty wings. They're not. They're not small, but they're just not big wings. And I was kind of a little disappointed until I figured out why. They do have lemon pepper seasoning on them, but here's why they're so good, great one. They've been called lemon pepper wings. That is a misnomer. They are lemon pepper barbecue wings. So they actually have a lemon pepper barbecue sauce that they drizzle on top of these wings. And when I tell you, and I said this to our buddy of the show, when I tell you that, never once, and you know me, I like to cook, and on top of that, when I cook, I like to experiment. I consider recipes more guidelines than rules, okay? I never once thought to put lemon pepper and barbecue sauce together. Like, never crossed my mind. And now that I've tried it, I'm like, I can't believe I never thought of this.
What kind of barbecue was it, though? Was it ketchup-based barbecue?
I don't really know, because the power in the flavor, the lemon pepper kind of cut through the barbecue sauce in a real good way. Like, it was a traditional barbecue sauce, but the lemon pepper cut through it in a way that both of those tastes were present, but they mixed perfectly. It was just a classic barbecue sauce with lemon pepper put into it, and it was fantastic. Definition of finger looking good, all right? Because I quite literally licked my fingers when I was done with the wings. They were not big meaty wings. They were pretty average, you know, run-of-the-mill bar wings with a lemon pepper barbecue sauce drizzle on the top of them. Here's what they got right. And as soon as I ate wing number one, I said, I get it, Lou Williams. Here's what they got right. The way that they flash fry these wings, the exterior of the wing, the skin of the wing, was a perfect crispy texture. All right? A lot of people screw this up because either they over fry the wing to get a crispy exterior and they end up overcooking the meat on the inside so the meat's a little dry, or they end up cooking the meat on the inside to a very good kind of, I don't say fall off the bone, but fall off the bone consistency. But it ends up making the skin on the outside have kind of a you know, moist, not crispy consistency. They nailed it, dude. The skin had a perfect crispy texture to it. The meat on these wings was perfect. It was perfect. So four wings that weren't quite as big as I had hoped they were going to be. They were a bit undersized. Not awful. Not like I felt ripped off. It was for the lemon pepper. And by the way, the flavor is lemon pepper or Lou's lemon pepper barbecue. They literally named it after him after that. It was $15 for 10 wings and fries. That's a pretty good deal. And even though they were maybe a little undersized for $15, the lemon pepper barbecue sauce they put on it absolutely made up for it. Perfect crispy texture. The meat was perfectly cooked. When I got through, I had five. Buddy of the show had five. When I got through my five wings, Zoe, I gave the best compliment that I can give to any chef or any cook or anybody who makes food, the best compliment I can give to a meal. When we got done, because we were sitting on the tailgate of a pickup truck, so I didn't have like a chair, I leaned over onto the bed of the truck, great one, and I just went, whew. Like, that's the best response you can get to a meal, right? It's just somebody leaning back and going, whew, with a clean plate in front of them. Perfect texture of both the skin and the meat. The lemon pepper barbecue sauce was the, I'm going to say, I hesitate anytime I talk about anything to say, oh, this was the best blank that I've ever had in my life. Because ordinarily when I do that, I end up at some point circling back around and being like, oh, no, actually, I forgot about this other thing. So I will put it this way. I am going to say that I am comfortable saying, great one, these wings were inside of the top three wings I've ever had in my life. Inside, wow. Top three.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you don't think that expectations may have heightened the taste?
I had that conversation on the way to get them. I was like, let me tell you, buddy of the show, let me tell you what I'm afraid of. There have been very few things in my life that I have waited 5 years for. Very few things. I dated my wife, lived with my wife for 4 years. And then proposed. We got married going towards our fifth year together. I didn't wait 5 years to marry my wife. I, with the exception of my very first radio station when I was a Ute, this place is the second job I've ever kept for 5 years or more. I don't wait for things for 5 years. Never have. I talked about these wings for 5 years, and I was afraid that I may have talked up Lemon Pepper Lou's wings for 5 years, to a point where they could have been the best wings of all time, but the expectations were so high that they would be impossible to meet. We've had this conversation about other things, like movies, right? When we know a movie's coming, the Superman movie, we knew that movie was coming, and we were excited about it, but we only knew that movie was coming for like 2 years. And I still had that concern of like, have I built this thing up in my head under James Gunn's direction? That it's just not going to have the capability to live up to it. I've been waiting on these Lemon Pepper Lou wings for 5 years. And I said, I'm concerned that maybe I built them up in my head, in my imagination, to a level that they could not attain no matter how good they were. And I will say, great one, that they may not have gotten to what I would have said were perfect. They could have been bigger. They could have been meatier. Outside of that, in terms of the sauce, the lemon pepper barbecue combination, which again, I've been cooking for my entire life, never once thought mix lemon pepper and barbecue. Not only am I going to do that, on Friday night, I have already told the wifey, stay home, I'm cooking dinner, because I'm going to figure out the right mix to make that sauce, or at least as close as I can get to it, and I'm going to do it on salmon. I'm going to do it as a side. I'm going to put it on vegetables. I'm going to make lo mein, but I'm going to use that as the sauce instead of a traditional lo mein. I'm pumped about it. The sauce was perfect. The skin texture was perfect. The meat of the wing was perfect. It is hard to get skin and meat both right. Usually you get one or the other. They nailed both of them. The sauce was great. I had just one complaint, which was they were undersized. They were small wings. Outside of that, great one. We've been talking these wings up for 5 years. And the very first thing I did, and I haven't posted it because I got to edit it because I'm not good enough to like make the TikTok videos on my phone. I have to send it to my computer and do the video editing because I'm 100 years old and technology passes me by. I filmed every step of this process. I got to make it into a review video. But when I did, I straight up after bite number one, first bite, I was like, yep, these hit the mark. I was like, Lou Williams, I don't know what I would risk an NBA two-week paycheck for, but this is as close as I've ever said I would.
All right, so now you can check two things off your list, SEC Media Days and Lemon Pepper
Magic City Wings.
There you go.
Lemon Pepper Lou's Magic City Wings. Now, let me get to the second part of the thing that I wanted to talk about in the last segment before we were so rudely interrupted by technical difficulties, and that was last night's Major League Baseball All-Star Game and Monday night's Home Run Derby. I have a couple of takes. I want to start with what I wanted to get to yesterday, but we just ran out of time with the interviews that we got booked, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, do have one for you live. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Elijah Campbell covers the South Carolina Gamecocks for 107.5 The Game in Columbia. He is as close to the team as you can get. Elijah Campbell's going to come by in the 9 o'clock hour. We'll talk some Gamecock football with him. Monday night, watched the Home Run Derby in the hotel room. I was tired. I slept like 4 hours Sunday night. I knew we had a big day. I had to get here very early on Monday morning. So I said, I'm going to stay at the crib. I'm going to stay at the hotel and watch the Derby. The Home Run Derby's fun. The Home Run Derby is excellent. I do have one take. Go back to the outs method. The pitch clock ain't it. All right? Now, it is for one reason, and that is presentation on baseball. And I know the moment that I developed that take. The moment I developed that take was when O'Neill Cruz of the Pittsburgh Pirates hit a home run that would be tallied at 517 feet. I have been going to Atlanta Braves baseball games at Truist Park for many years now, and I've seen a lot of balls that get hit to the chop house out in right field. I have seen in a regular season game one baseball get to the roof. And it didn't really go onto the roof. It kind of hit the front panel. That was, I believe, Matt Olson 2 years ago was the one guy I saw that happen. O'Neill Cruz hit a home run that went 517 feet. Not only did it land on the top of the roof of the chop house, it landed on the back of the top of the roof of the chop house. It was a moonshot. Here was the problem. In person, that would have been maybe in person, the greatest home run I've ever watched hit, even if it was in a derby. On TV, it sucked. Because on TV, they showed the swing, they showed the ball from a camera behind the plate, and they pulled away from it like the second that it hit, and they turned, and they did not have time, because of how far that baseball traveled, they did not have time to go from that home run landing, to show you how impressive it was, back to O'Neill Cruz for the next swing of the bat. That ball was in the air for so long that by the time they cut back, O'Neill Cruz had already swung and hit another ball, so they had to track that one in the air as it went out of the park. That's a problem. I want to see the swing, I want to see the contact, I want to see the fly, and I want to see the landing, and then I want to see a reset of that. But because they're on the pitch clock, and this is 1,000% a television-driven decision. Why? Because unfortunately, we have a breakneck fascination with speed. It's just got to be bang, ba-bang, 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 next one, next one, next one, next one, next one. That is why social media is social media. That's why Twitter's 280 characters and not 500. That is why Instagram Reels videos are 90 seconds or shorter. Because at 90 seconds, you risk losing the attention of people because the next endorphin hit is just one swipe of the phone screen away, right? This Major League Baseball Home Run Derby was set up for that. And I think it was bad. The Home Run Derby was excellent, but having to go bang, 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 next, 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 it took away from the product that I used to love. Give the boys 10 outs, right? And somebody said to me yesterday when I had this take here, I was talking baseball with a couple of guys on the other side of the building, and they said, wait a minute, Rob, 10 outs, like, that's not a lot. And I said, yeah, but you got to think about it. When you have a pitch limit and a pitch clock, guys got to swing at junk. They're not just swinging at grooved baseballs that are the pitch that they want. If you give them 10 outs with no pitch clock, no pitch count, no pitch clock, just 10 outs. Anything that you swing at and it doesn't go over the fence fair is an out. You give them that, now they're sitting on home run balls. And I'm willing to watch a guy take 2, 3, 4, 5 pitches before he takes a cut. I hate the pitch clock and pitch count method. Just give me 10 outs and let the boys go hit the group balls. Last night's All-Star game. I'm an old hat baseball fan. I'm an old school baseball fan. I'm 40 years old. I've loved baseball. I'm not adverse to change. In fact, I like change and I like gimmicks. In 2022, Major League Baseball put into effect a new tiebreaker for the All-Star game. If we are tied at 9, and this is for pitchers, because you don't want to have to, you don't want your last guy have to go out there and throw more innings in an All-Star game. You ask the guys to go out there, and most of them are on a pitch count of like 20 to 25 pitches, absolute max. Clayton Kershaw got 2 outs, and he got yanked because he was at that pitch count. So they went with a mini home run derby. And I heard a lot of old guys last night complaining that it wasn't baseball. Guys, the All-Star break is supposed to be fun. The All-Star game is supposed to be fun. The All-Star event as a whole, from start to finish, top to bottom, left to right, is supposed to be fun. That was fun. Now, I will acknowledge, they didn't go ninth inning until like 11:20, 11:30 at night last night. And at that point, I had to leave the bar to come home because I knew I needed to. I got to at least be asleep by midnight, right? Even if this thing goes extra innings, I got to be up at midnight. I got to be up, get a little extra sleep. I can't get in until 5:30. I got to sleep in until 5 a.m. So I'm like, if I'm out at midnight, I got 5 hours. That's absolutely perfect. So I was listening old school on the radio. The MLB app was carrying the game. And I was listening to the Home Run Derby. And it was electric. I was mad that I did not get to actually watch this. And I was saying, I'm a radio guy. I listen to games on the radio. When I watch Braves games at the house, I mute the television and I turn on the Braves radio broadcast to listen to radio. It's more, I'm a radio guy. The radio, I was mad I didn't get to watch TV. That's how much fun it was. The All-Star break is supposed to be fun. I think the All-Star game's perfect. I've said it before, and I'll say it again, and I got to confirm last night. Of every major American sport, Major League Baseball's All-Star game is the best. Major League's All-Star break is the best. Major League's All-Star festivities are the best. From the Village to the Derby to the game, it is designed to be fun. I think they get a little carried away sometimes. I think, unfortunately, they have tried to tailor it to be a perfect television product and not to be a great baseball product. Even with that, I still think the All-Star game is the best All-Star game in sports. I think the All-Star Home Run Derby is the best non-game All-Star event in sports. And if you did not have fun the last two nights watching Major League Baseball, you just don't think baseball is fun. And that's okay. Baseball ain't for everybody. Nothing is for everybody. But if you didn't have a great time the last two nights, you're just not a baseball guy, because that was two of the most fun nights I've ever had. I stayed up late for both despite being in this outstanding event, SEC Media Days, of which we are in day 3 of 4 here at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia. When we come back, I'm going to play you the interview we did yesterday with Peter Burns from the SEC Network. Peter spoke about the Aggies, about the Gamecocks. He talked about Lenoris. He talked about Shane Beamer, and he had very high praise for the head coach. I'll play that for you when we come back after Lonzo does an incredible sports flash.
It will be hawkish. The National League claimed last night's All-Star game in a home run derby swing off. The NL led 6-0 at one point, but the AL tied it up in the ninth, leading to the tiebreaker where players from each team got 3 swings and the homers were tallied. Philadelphia's Kyle Schwarber hit 3 in 3 pitches to give the NL a 4-3 win. 3-3, that's pretty good. Caitlin Clark was pulled from last night's 85-77 Fever win over the Sun with an apparent groin injury in the final minute of the game. Fever coach Stephanie White said Clark felt something in her groin and that she would be further evaluated today. Jets cornerback Sauce Gardner is now the highest-paid defensive back in the NFL after signing a 4-year, $120.4 million deal just 24 hours after the Jets extended receiver Garrett Wilson. Gardner's contract includes $85.63 million guaranteed.